Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into the Coffee Break Podcast. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for checking us out today. Typically, we're going to be adding a fresh pot of coffee up here Monday through Friday, but we've got lots of great content in the archives from our pre-podcast days, and I want to make some of that available to you as well. So on Saturdays, we're going to dip into the archive and bring out some of those chats for you. A bit of Coffee Break cold brew, if you will. So let's get it going now. I'm going to jump right into this because we've got a packed full show today. I had a chance a couple of weeks ago to chat with a man named Anthony Ray Hinton. Back in 1985, Anthony Ray wrongfully convicted of two murders. He spent 30 years on death row in Alabama. He was released in 2015 in a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court. We'll get into all the details of that case. But he was here to speak at Carroll College. I had a chance to sit down and talk with him before he gave that speech, and we're going to play that conversation for you now. Anthony Ray, thanks for taking some time to share your story this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me in this beautiful, scenic Colorado, Montana. That's what I call it, Colorado, Montana. But it's Montana. Thank you for having me.
To give folks an idea of sort of how suddenly, how surprising your story started, you're simply mowing your mother's lawn. It's 1985. Police show up and arrest you for a couple of murders, murders that you didn't commit. Take me back to that day. I mean, that must be a day that's just sort of seared into your memory, right?
Oh, it is. Never woke up that morning like any typical day in July in Alabama. And my mother had made some lemonade, and I went in the kitchen to get a glass. It was about 110 degrees, and she told me to cut the grass. And I goes out and start cutting the grass, and just happened to look up 25 minutes into cutting the grass, and two white gentlemen were standing there that I didn't know. Cut the lawnmower off and asked them, can I help them? And then they identified themselves as two detectives, and they said they had a warrant for my arrest. And I said, for what? And they first said, we'll explain that to you later. But right now, we want you to put your hands behind your back. And I did that. And they put the handcuff on me and was proceeding to put me in the squad car. And I said, at least allow me to go in the house and tell my mother I'm being arrested for something. And one of the detectives said, we can't let you go back inside. And we argued for about 2 minutes. And finally, the other detective said, let him go in and tell his mother. And I just go in and show my mother the handcuff. And like any good mother, she began to scream and holler, what are those handcuffs doing on my baby? And they take me back out, and the other detective come back out, and we proceeded to go to the county jail. And on my way to the county jail, I asked him, why are you arresting me? And finally, one of the detectives looked around, the one that wasn't driving. He said, we're charging you with first-degree robbery, first-degree kidnap, and first-degree attempted murder. And I said, I haven't done any of that. You got the wrong person. And he said, let me tell you something. Let me tell it to you right now. I don't care whether you did it or didn't do it, but remember this. I'm going to make sure you're found guilty of it. And I said, for a crime I didn't do? He said, you must have a hearing problem. I just told you. I don't care whether you did it or didn't do it. And so as we got to the county jail, I sit in this holding cell for about 2.5 hours. Finally, he came in and I said, detective, what date and time did this crime take place? He goes through his folder and he tells me the date and time. And to be honest with you, I said, thank you, Jesus. I said, I was at work that day in that particular time because I was working the night shift. I said, it couldn't have been me. And I said, thank you, Jesus. I said, my supervisor happened to be white. I said, here's his phone number. Here's the address. You can go out there and check it out. And they left in about, I would say, 4 hours or close to 5 hours. They come back and he said, Anthony, I have good news and bad news. He said, the good news is we're no longer going to charge you with first-degree robbery, first-degree kidnap, first-degree attempted murder. Your alibi checks out. You was at work. He said, but now the bad news. We have decided that we're going to charge you with 2 counts of first-degree capital murder. And I said, but I haven't killed anyone. He said, you know what? He said, I truly believe you. He said, but y'all is always taking up for one another. Take this rap for your homeboy. And with tears coming down my cheeks, I said, detective, there's not a homeboy in this world I would take a rap for like this. And they take me to trial. I got found guilty on two counts of first-degree capital murder. And the judge sentenced me to death, and that judge had the audacity to stand up and say, "May God have mercy on your soul." And I spent the next 30 years in a 5x7 cage on Alabama death row for a crime that they knew that I didn't commit.
How do you retain your sanity in an instance like that? Of course, there's plenty of people in prison then and today saying, "Well, I didn't do this." So your plea is sort of lost in that sea of, "I'm innocent."
Yes. Well, you know, all of my life, I was brought up to have faith. And for the first 3 years, I didn't speak to another human being for 3 years. I was in this dark place. I was so angry with the people that did this to me. And I thought this anger that I was carrying was keeping me alive. But going into the fourth year, I realized that anger is what was killing me. I wasn't the person that I had always been. I'm a person that loved to make people laugh. I think laughter is good for the soul. And so going into the fourth year, I just made up my mind. I said, I realized that there's nothing I can do about being here. I got to believe that somebody will look at my case one day and say, "Hey, we made a mistake here." I had to hold on to that hope. And once I realized that there's nothing I can do about the situation that I was in, but I could control my joy. And once I got my mind somehow to believe that everything was going to be all right, I just took one day at a time. And I kept believing. I never lose the faith that one day I would be set free. And when you lose hope, then you're done. And while I was there, 11 men took their own life, not counting the men that took a razor and cut the artery and tried to bleed out and tried to. And I said to myself, where did they lose hope at? Because for 30 years, I kept getting no from the court system. Denied. And I just, somehow God gave me the strength that my mind, I visualized and being free. I was never in prison. In my mind, when I tell you, I thought I was free as a bird. In my mind, I visualized going to the queen, to the palace to see Queen Elizabeth. I married Halle Berry. I divorced her. Married Sandra Bullock. Man, God kept saying, "You don't lost it." They used to tell my best friend, "You need to tell his attorney. He really have lost it." Because I never did act like I was locked up. I just believed that in my mind I was free as a bird, and whatever was going to happen was going to happen. And I just took one day at a time.
You were convicted initially basically on a pair of ballistics experts who said the bullets came from a dusty old revolver up in your mother's attic, right?
An old 38 Smith & Wesson revolver that hadn't been fired in at least 25 years. And what I would love for your listeners to know, I am the one that told the police that my mom had a gun. They asked me, did I own a pistol? And I said, no. They said, do your mom own a pistol? I said, yes. I said, she have an old 38 Smith & Wesson pistol. My mom gave them the gun, thinking whatever it was, she was trying to help me. And they took that gun and said it matched the bullets that they got out of the victim body. I knew if no two gun was alike, I knew they was lying. I knew this from every fiber in my being, they was telling a lie. And so when I finally got a lawyer, when I went to trial, the lawyer that represented me hired a one-eyed ballistic expert, but he wasn't a ballistic expert, he was a civil engineer. And he got up there and, when I tell you, the prosecution crucified him. They crucified him. The prosecution said, you only have one eye, right? And he would say, yeah. He said, when you tried to test the gun, what did you say you saw? He said, I didn't see anything but my finger. I never did see the bullets. And the prosecutor ate him up. And I looked at my lawyer. I said, they're going to find me guilty. And sure enough, the jury found me guilty. As time went by, I had another lawyer. He was trying to get me a life without parole. And he said, Anthony, I think I can get you a life without parole. And I said, life without parole is for guilty people, not innocent people. I'm willing to die for something that I didn't do. I said, I will never stand up and say I did something to save my life. In reality, I'm taking my own life. I said, but I can't stand up and say I did this when I didn't do it. And I gave him a parable that my mom gave me, and I hope someone out there can understand this. At the age of 12 years old, my mother looked at me and she said, let me tell you something. If you man enough to bend down and pick up a rock, if you man enough to throw that rock, then you should be man enough to say you throw that rock. I said, this is one rock I did not throw. Therefore, if the state of Alabama is hell bent on executing me for something they know that I didn't do, I said, so be it. There's nothing I can do about it. I said, I don't want to die for something I didn't do. I said, but all of us have to die at some point and sometime. And if this the way that God intend for me to die, I said, so be it. But I could never stand up and tell the victim family a lie like this. Nor could I tell my mother a lie like this. I said, I would prefer to die than to get a life without parole. And I fired that lawyer that day. And I wrote another lawyer by the name of Brian Stevenson of Equal Justice Initiative. And he took on my case. And he worked 16 years before we could prove my innocence.
Yeah, ultimately, they found, was it three independent people found that not only did those bullets not come from that gun, they couldn't have come from the same gun.
Yes. I asked my lawyer, I said, I need you to find a southern white man. He have to be from the South. I said, but I need him to be one of the best of the best. I said, I need him to be for the death penalty. I need him to just tell the truth. That's all I own, just tell the truth. And he found three of the world renowned known experts. And when he got these three men, he informed me that these three men testified 98% of the time for the prosecution. And he said, what I'm trying to tell you is that these three men put men's on death row. They don't help get them off, they put them on death row. And I said, Mr. Stevenson, did you remember to ask them, would they just tell the truth? He said, they said they would tell exactly what the evidence show. And each one of them came at a different time. They did their own testing. And what I found out, every one of them tried to manipulate the gun to make it match. And it still wouldn't match. And we took this new finding, I call it new, to three different attorney general in Alabama. And every one of them refused to take 1 hour and reexamine the bullets. And so Mr. Stevenson took my case to the United States Supreme Court. 2 years later, United States Supreme Court said that I was entitled to a new trial. The state of Alabama told the judge that they had lost the gun. She gave them time to find the gun. They went, they found the gun. They come back and say, Your Honor, we found the gun, but it was great sadness that we informed the court that we have lost the bullets. She said, are you kidding me? She said, well, I'm going to give you time to find the bullets. They found the bullets, and while we thought they was looking for the bullets, the prosecution had asked one of his old experts that testified 30 years ago to come back and reexamine the bullets. And when he came back, he examined the bullets, and he was quoted as saying, I don't see what I saw 30 years ago. But he saw exactly what he saw 30 years ago. Bullets don't change. It's like fingerprint. My life didn't matter to them. They was perfectly willing to execute a man for something they knew that he didn't do. And I lived in this case for 30 years. And I don't know, can anybody ever try to wrap their head around, I was there for something I knew I didn't do.
Yeah.
And that made it even harder for me to just get through the day. And had it not been, as I told you earlier, for my mind being able to just escape, there's no way I could have survived that.
Lots more of my conversation with Anthony Ray Hinton coming up after this. We've got to take a quick break, but then more Coffee Break. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. It's brought to you by News Radio 95 KCAP. Now, back to the show. Welcome back into Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. We're playing for you this morning a conversation I had a couple of weeks ago with a man named Anthony Ray Hinton. He was wrongfully accused, wrongfully convicted, spent 30 years on death row in Alabama before the Supreme Court ultimately set him free in 2015. Want to rejoin our conversation now. Ultimately released April of 2015, the Supreme Court unanimously overturning that conviction. That has to be another day just seared into your memory. What's the emotion when you get that word? It's got to be unbelievable.
I cried like a baby. You know, you had no one even mention freedom for 28 years. And then you get a call from your attorney saying that you're going to be set free. And I was in up in the county jail. They had brought me from the state penitentiary to the county jail. And you're in there with these young men, and in prison you have to maintain a certain image. But when I heard that word free, I lost it. I got on my knees and I cried like a baby, because finally after 30 years, I was going home. But I was going home to a home that my mom had passed while I was in locked up. My father had passed while I was locked up. Three of my sisters had passed while I was locked up. And so it was like I'm going to a world that I know nothing about. And I never will forget my best friend that visited me every day for 30 years, every week for 30 years. And he told me, he said, the world have changed. Everything you know about the world when you was out, it changed. And I kept wondering, what did he mean? And I just as soon as I got in his car, and he asked me a profound question. He said, where's the first place you want to go? I said, if you don't mind, take me where they buried my mother. And we get in this car and we start down the road, and a voice come on, a white lady. In 1/10 of a mile, turn right. And I said, what the hell? Scared me, man. And I'm thinking, I said so. I'm pointing in the back. I'm too afraid to look back there. And I'm telling him, a white lady's back there in the back. And he laughing. I'm wondering, why is he laughing? And a thought come to mind, they have tricked my best friend. They taking me back to prison. And so when he couldn't take it no longer, he pulled over to the right side of the road and he said, that's a GPS. I said, what is that? He said, all I have to do is punch in the address and she'll tell me exactly where to go. I said, well, how'd she get in there? I'm thinking it's a real live person. And he said, no, it's a recording. He said, I told you everything have changed since you left.
Yeah.
And I said, you mean to tell me you don't have to pull over to the Philly station and ask for direction no more? And he said, no. Being out have been a blessing, but it also been a curse in the sense of learning modern technology. Technology passed me by. Infrastructure that I once knew as 2-lane, now it's 6-lane freeways and interstate. And so every day I'm learning new technology and new things. You know, nobody said, wait on Anthony Ray Hinton. He going to be released in 30 years and we'll start then the process. But you said something earlier about every day innocent men and women go to prison in this country. Sad enough, some go to death row. And I just believe that when I came out, I was the 152nd person that had been exonerated. And I keep asking myself and I keep asking people, how many men and women need to be exonerated before we realize we don't need a death penalty in this country? And the only way we can assure ourselves that we would never, ever execute an innocent person is that we don't have one. Because believe me, the state of Alabama had every intention of executing me for a crime they knew that I didn't commit. And I often tell the average citizen, they don't kill in the state name, they kill in your name. And they was going to kill me in your name. And whether you're for the death penalty or not, you shouldn't want innocent men and women being executed for crime they didn't commit.
You've authored a book, part of Oprah's book club. Yes. Right now. You go and you speak on prison reform, as you've said, but you also speak on the power of faith and forgiveness. And you touched on reform, and that's understandable. Yes. And you've talked about your faith. But forgiveness, how are you in that place where you can speak on forgiveness?
I truly believe that forgiveness is not about the other person. Forgiveness is for you. understand that those men that did this to me, they haven't emailed me, they haven't faxed me, they haven't called me, they haven't even asked me for forgiveness.
So never an apology from the state, anything like that?
No. But in order for me to be truly free, I have to forgive them. And I didn't forgive them so they could sleep good at night. I forgave them so I could sleep good at night. And in my book, I write about a young man by the name of Henry Francis Hayes. Henry Francis Hayes was a Ku Klux Klansman. And I tell people, Henry needed forgiveness. Henry needed it from the people that he had been taught to hate. And I try to show people, I try to be an example of forgiveness. You know, when I lay down at night, I lay down with a clear conscience that I've wronged no man or no woman today. I lay down that I have not offended anyone today. And so forgiveness to me was, as I read in my Bible, Mark 11, 25, 26, 27, and I read this scripture where it said, Jesus said, if you stand at the altar asking for forgiveness, if you're not willing to forgive, how can you expect my heavenly Father to forgive you? And so many of us want forgiveness, but we're not willing to forgive. And I think that is not right. I truly want to lay down at night knowing that I have no ill feeling toward anyone. And I didn't want them to let me out. And I still had all this hatred, all this animosity in me because I couldn't even enjoy Montana. If you're full of hate, there's no way you can enjoy anything in life because hate is consuming you where you can't enjoy. I've been blessed since I've been out 3 years. I've been to England. I've been to South Africa. I've been to mostly every state in the United States. I've sit around people that I never thought that I would meet. And guess what? I have enjoyed every moment of it simply because I don't carry that hatred for those men that did this to me in my heart. I never forget, I am a beloved Yankee fan. And I was asked, what would you love to do? And I said, I would love to go to a Yankee game. And I said, I would love to see what a $15 hot dog tastes like. CNN sent me to the Yankees game, me and my best friend. And CBS were there, and they said, well, how does the hot dog taste? I said, it tastes just like a regular $2 hot dog to me. But I realized that it was $15 because it was in Yankee Stadium. My point being, I could not have enjoyed the game. I could not have enjoyed being there with my best friend if I had all that hatred still inside of me. So when you release that hatred, then only then are you able to live. And now I'm trying to live the best life that I can.
We're running a little bit low on time, but I want to ask you, because you mentioned Henry Hayes. He's a former Klansman. He was sentenced to death for a lynching
yes.
In 1981. Ultimately, he was executed in 1997, and it's surprising a little bit as the forgiveness is, it seemed you formed, from what I understand, is a friendship almost with this man.
I did. You know, on death row, you don't know who anyone is. You're just in your cell, and you can't see anyone. And Henry and I used to talk every day, and to make a long story short, I befriend Henry, and when I found out who Henry was, I asked my question, did it matter? And people ask me all the time, how could you defriend someone like that? And I often tell them, well, let's think about it. From the time Henry was conceived, he was taught by his mother, his father, and his community to hate. All of Henry's life, he was taught to hate. Henry was mentally abused by everyone that he came in contact with. And his father was a wizard in the Klans, and he gave Henry an order to go out along with two other Klansmen and kill the first black male that they saw. Henry came across this 19-year-old black male, and they hung him and they cut off his genitals. Now, when Henry came to death row, I couldn't judge Henry because I, too, had been found guilty of a crime. Although I didn't commit my crime, but society had said, you deserve to die as well. So when I befriended Henry and when I found out who Henry was, I wanted to show Henry the side of love. I, along with other black men, treated Henry as though he hadn't never been a Klansman. And what I find so remarkable on the night of Henry's execution, they ask you two things. What is your last meal request? Henry wanted an 8-ounce steak. And they ask you, do you have any last word? Henry was quoted as saying, all of my life I've been taught to hate. The very people that my father, my mother, my community taught me to hate are the very people that showed me what love really is. And tonight I leave this world now knowing what love feel like. Tell me that it wasn't worth it. Because I often ask people, we love to hear it takes a village to raise a child. Where was that village when Hayes was being mentally abused by his family, his community? Imagine if someone had got to Hayes and tried to show him love. Perhaps Hayes would have never went out and did what he did. And so to me, we need to show more love and more understanding toward one another. And Hayes was just an example of what pure love can do for a human being.
You've got an incredible story. You're an incredible man, Anthony Ray.
So
I mean, you truly are. What do you hope that people get? I mean, you go all over the place talking to folks. Ultimately, what is the goal? What do you hope people get out of hearing you talk?
Well, my goal is to bring America to the realization first that we don't need a death penalty in this country. Too many mistakes is being made. And my second goal is I want people to read my book and walk away with the understanding that we all have something we can give another human being. I often say, if you're drowning, does it really matter what color the hand is reaching there to save your life? And in my book, I tried to teach people that even though I was on death row with other death row inmates, I still had something that I could give those men that had been conceived by the world as unfit to be in this world. And I just want people to reach and examine their own heart and their own soul and realize that, you know what? I can do better. I can treat my fellow man better. You don't have to agree with everything another person say, but we all deserve respect from one another. We all deserve kindness from one another. And the more important thing, I think we need to start showing humanity toward one another. Let's learn to help one another instead of putting one another down. And so that's what I really want, to just make people realize you can do better than what you have done.
Anthony Ray Hinton, his book is The Sun Does Shine, How I Found Life and Freedom on Death Row. Thank you, sir, for coming in and for chatting with us
today. Thank you so much.
I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Coffee Break, brought to you by News Radio 95 KCAP. Be sure to swing back by on Monday for another fresh pod.